Let's
get Mr. Clark in here, please. Mr. Clark, you were saying?
Frank, I heard your question, and I can understand people's frustration and concern. But listen, we either pay it through the unemployment scheme or some grant, or we pay it through the welfare department. You cannot leave people in abject poverty when there's no revenue. What the social fallout would be devastating to this country. So whether the government does it through unemployment benefits, welfare benefits, it has to be done somehow or the other. So I don't have an issue with it in principle. I, however, think that it's an ideal opportunity for the NIS to go there and administer the regulations properly and try and get more and more of these people on board. And this is a great opportunity for them to help defund, because ultimately the government is going to have to either give non-contributory pension or NIS pensions down the road. And I think this is an opportunity for us to deal with this now. But it is not just the NIS. We have a significant number of Barbadians not paying the fair share of rent in this country, whether it is VAT that they should be paying or it's income tax that they should be paying. And don't fool yourself. There are a significant number of small people, what I call small, because that people think don't make enough money to pay taxes. And that is a misconception in Barbados. We have to capture the people that should be paying taxes, and we have to capture the people that should be contributing to their future social security benefits. And I think that is something that we need to strengthen as a country in order to protect the long-term future of these schemes and the country as a whole from the collection of tax revenues going forward.
All right. I have a question here.
Sanka, if I may, before you move on.
Very, very quickly, because time is getting...
Yes, very quickly. That a lot of the persons who are in the informal sector are females who are head of households. And we have to remember that as well. Whenever we're thinking, we have to think around the issue that it seems and see all of the other parameters and all of the other permutations when we're making decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those instances where you do need to be propping up everybody at some level. Everybody will not need the same amount of assistance, but everybody needs some assistance at this point in time. Mm-hmm.
Are you satisfied, Mr. Pizzo, with the whole idea of the mitigation unit that's in the Prime Minister's office and giving families $600, vulnerable families? Because that is all part of the program.
Yes, that was one of the first initiatives that was announced. Mm-hmm. What was not announced was the parameters for qualification, means testing. Mm-hmm. I believe there must be one, and I am aware that certain persons connected have been asking questions of political operatives on both sides as to who they would recommend, but that may still leave some persons falling through the cracks. And perhaps if we all knew what the criteria were, then we would know someone in our community who is in dire need and we could recommend them. So that we know that it is being fairly distributed as opposed to politically distributed.
Well, you did say it was from both sides of the aisle, because I was thinking that... And why I asked you in particular, it was because I was trying to find out if the opposition, you said operatives, so I'll use that word, the operatives for the opposition party were also involved, but you said that they were.
Only some, you know, it hasn't come through in any centralized way. I am aware of individuals who have been asked that question, and usually it is because of their connection in a particular way. But even if you are using opposition political operatives, you are still limiting reach to politics. And I don't think that this is a situation where politics needs to intervene to that extent. When you are looking at poverty alleviation, we should be as neutral as possible. And within communities, we are more able to know who in our districts and villages are the ones who are in dire need and falling through the cracks. And that is why I was stating that we need to remove that political influence, take it out of the Prime Minister's office and have it administered where everybody knows what the mean testing is.
Dr. Maskell.
Thank you. I have to be careful not to treat a politician as a pariah. In all fairness, there are very few organizations, perhaps the church, that will know a district or constituency better than a politician. And the notion that politicians lack heart is joke. You understand? So I understand the trying to distinguish, but that has not happened. So I'm saying that we must not believe that because someone has a label called politician, that they lack a consciousness or they can be unfair in any way to people who are really in need. And in that regard, when you look at the way we have structured Barbados along constituency lines, and then you ask male or female to go out there and get to know their constituency, and they do, then they are very well able. Maybe a postman is the other person that is very, very capable of doing these kind of things, identifying people really in need.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
Could have been in a position.
All right, Mr. Pisa, I think we have exhausted that. It's now 1 o'clock. We only have 15 minutes to go, and we still want to look at these three sections. Plus, I have a question here from, a comment from economist Jeremy Stephen that I would like to read and for it to be dealt with as well. It's concerning the catastrophe fund. He said there's something that everyone is missing. The fact that they have attached this recovery to it, it means that they can also refinance the debt held by those who were restructured. The government is really applying significant pressure on the financial system. If they save $1 billion, it knocks off a further $1 billion off banking assets. While the banks are also expected to hold strain via moratoriums. If we are thinking strategically, we should expect that on the back end of this, that the same banking fees the Prime Minister complained about will be the order of the day, or that banks and credit unions will have to consolidate their positions, which means closures, or in the case of banks, a wholesale departure from our shores. The government, if smart, must over the next year allow the credit unions the opportunity to own their own bank in the face of this. I would say it's all a necessary evil, re-invoking the catastrophe clause, but I would feel more settled if they created the legislation necessary to enable the transition. Dr. Maskell, Mr. Clark, and Mr. Pisa, in that order, could you comment, please?
I have no difficulty with trying to establish a local bank, but I don't think that in these circumstances where there's so much liquidity in the system, that this is going to impact on commercial banks to the extent where they will flee. I can't see that happening. And I don't have a crystal ball to be able to know, but I can't see how these entities who are postponing the payment of interest, or I don't think inclusive, it could be the principal as well, but all you're doing is lengthening the amount, the length of the loan, extending it, and therefore delaying in some respects when you receive the interest payment. But so I can't see the catastrophe that's being suggested here.
Mr. Clark?
I was trying to follow what he was saying. I'm not an economist, yeah. So I really couldn't follow what he was saying, but I didn't think any catastrophe impacted the bonds. This pandemic doesn't impact the bonds. Restructuring that was done during the BERT restructuring program. But I am not sure Dr. Ambassador Maskell might be able to clarify what Mr. Stevens mentioned. But I do support the need, because the catastrophe clause in the bond restructuring is not does not relate to pandemic. Those are natural catastrophe, hurricanes, floods, storms, etc. But in this regard about the credit unions, I think it would be good to have credit unions involved. I think that the credit unions need to come together and make a decision on that. But it'd be good to see a local bank involved in the Barbados banking sector. I don't I would like to see something like that happening in Barbados then. So I welcome such a suggestion. I welcome any encouragement that can be done in that regard.
Mr. Pisa?
Yes, I too support a local bank. I believe everybody now has come to the conclusion that it was a mistake to sell our local bank. I don't know how much, and I believe this is the point that Mr. Stephen was linking, how much we can rely on a banking sector that is imported. They can uproot at any time, especially since we have asked of them to give moratorium on existing mortgages and loans, and also in a climate where they can have the expectation that non-performing loans will edge up. For the time being, and I believe given what the Prime Minister said, that there are ongoing talks with the bank, ongoing talks between the Governor of the Central Bank and the Prime Minister, I beg your pardon, the Governor of the Central Bank and the banking community. They so far have agreed to that moratorium, but they are not budging in relation to fees in any large measure. And I believe that this may be the consideration that he's thinking of. What are we leveraging?
Actually, he wrote me back just now, sort of cross, and said liquidity is not the problem. Profitability is.
Yeah, come on. They made a lot of profit even after restructuring. Come on.
Oh, yes, the banks have been making profit. But
even after the restructure.
Do they see that in a climate where persons may well be unable to service their mortgages and loans, and there is no market for repossessed property? So I think what he is raising is whether or not we may not be tipping the scales in the wrong direction by interfering with the catastrophe fund.
I thought I'd explain away this catastrophe fund thing, you know.
I haven't spoken into it.
I told you all earlier, the catastrophe fund can now be utilized because in the debt agreement of the government, they have negotiated a disaster clause. And in the event that we have a disaster, it will trigger the capacity of the government not to have to service its debt for 2 years. Which therefore means that the government gets to save about $1.7 billion that it would otherwise have spent. And in those circumstances, given that the catastrophe fund only has $50 million, this is a catastrophe of a different kind, an invisible one. It therefore means that the government could utilize this $50 million. And if during the course, God forbid, of this year, we are struck by some unfortunate situation relating to a hurricane of a certain magnitude, and even along the lines of Kirk that hardly did any damage, it would trigger the clause, and therefore government then has access to much more than $50 million. As a result, we don't have to hold on to the $50 million since there is an immediate need, and the $40 million from the $50 will go towards providing the loan for businesses who, if they want to, can have a loan of 50% of what they pay, right? That's a zero interest. And that is to protect them given their cash flow circumstances occasioned by COVID.
That's so it. Then the question
there's no
has
need to worry
be,
about the catastrophe fund.
Well, no, we have to worry about the catastrophe fund because hurricanes are a reality every single year. Also, could advise the country whether or not the catastrophe clause has been triggered with our external creditors.
I was heavily involved in the negotiations of the bond restructuring for the creditors group of our business. Mm-hmm. And I'm the co-chair of the board. So let me tell you, there's no clause in the current bond restructuring that allows the government to stop paying the interest because of a pandemic. And that is strictly for a natural disaster, hurricanes, etc. So don't be afraid about that. But let me go back, Mr. Pisa. I mean, in the whole scheme of things, $50 million in a $10 billion GDP, in an economy like ours, $50 million is a drop in the ocean. In all reality, it is easily recoverable by the government, and if there's a disaster, through the disaster clause and the bond restructuring program. I don't really see the need to continue harping on that. It's only $50 million. And I know it's a lot of money, but we have a lot more capability, really, true as a country, under the restructured BRRRR program, financing of the bond, to recover that money pretty quickly during a catastrophe. So I would not be too worried about this at this time, really and truly.
All right, and let's move on from that. We're really looking at part four of the economic plan, which looks at $130 million in tax refunds. We're talking $50 million in personal tax, income tax, value added tax of $80 million, corporation tax of $89 million. I have people here on the WhatsApp saying, all this talk about tax refunds and I have not received my my last reverse credit. So how will this tax refund help individuals? Mr. Clark, I'll lead off with you.
Move on to
the value added tax as well as the corporation tax.
Sure. I would comment on all three because it's a package. Mm-hmm. And first of all, what the issue here was that as a result of the shutdown, say for 5 weeks, 6 weeks in some cases, many businesses and private self-employed people were suffering badly. There was no revenue. They were trying to keep their employees employed, and they had to pay their rent, utilities, et cetera. So it was felt that the government should be able to help the business sector, small and large, at this time. Many of the individuals would get back their personal income tax returns, which were due, the arrears that were due from prior years. That was $50 million. That would help the small man who is not a large VAT payer. Once they had an income tax refund, it would help them. The VAT, obviously, for people over the VAT registration limit, these are arrears that were due over many years. And so this is money that is owed to people. This is not any handout. This is money that is owed by the government that the government had agreed to repay over a period of time in the BRRRR program. But what they've done now is to fast-track it to put some cash flow back into the economy. Corporation tax, these will come later because, as the government told us, they don't have any, they need to manage their cash flow initially to ensure that they can do this over a period of time, and it'll be reviewed as time goes on. But the refund is to put cash flow back in the economy to help big, small, individual business people get through the cash flow crisis that they're facing over the last 6 weeks, and which they will continue to face over the next few months, because business is going to start back. But business is not going to start back the way it used to be. And I mean, I think people need to understand that. This whole economy is starting back in a phased approach. It's going to start slowly. And many businesses are going to still have a real challenge over the next few months getting through this. So this is to help them through this situation.
And you're fine. I'll give you 30 more seconds there, because I now realize we have to wrap up. It's now 1:13.
And I still have to speak to that issue.
Yes, I know. You'll get a chance.
Sanka, I'll give you an extension for, let's see if we can try to get it as close to
1:30?
1:30, yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yes. The producer is so kind.
So you want me to comment on anything else, or?
Well, no, I'll let Mr. Pisa get in here, and then Dr. Maskell, and then we can move on to something else, and then we can wrap up around 1:25. So go right ahead. Go right ahead, Mr. Pisa.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The concern here is that we're speaking about payments that will add up for government at a time when state-owned enterprises that were hived off are now going to be looking to government for assistance, health being one of those areas with the QEH. I'm thinking of the garbage and sewage levy, and most certainly tourism will not have, it won't have the call on it, and it also would not have the benefit of receiving the tourism-related taxes. So the query has to be in relation to how government raises the money in order to finance these payments. if it is by way of loan, if it is by way of call on a foreign reserve, and to make a suggestion that, like other countries around the world, we pay some attention to our bloated cabinet. And now may be the time to trim some fat and get some money back that can be deployed. We have to be looking at cost savings from every single angle. We know of a certainty that countries larger than ours have smaller cabinets. I believe it is 22% in the UK Parliament, and they have 10 million people to service. And we also know locally and internationally, in times of stress, we have had ministers sacrifice salaries, and we may need to be having that conversation again. I really want to hear from Ambassador Maskell the financing aspect of these payouts. I understand the need to put cash into the economy in the hope that people will spend it instead of saving it. I personally hope they do the opposite, because rainy day funds are going to be critical right now. But I understand why they would want to put money back in people's hands. But we need to know the source of the funds.
Sandra, I want to come in after Dr. Maskell, after Ambassador Maskell.
Yes, sir. Oh, that's great. Dr. Maskell?
Well, the issue, there's some genuine concerns about the fact that the GST will now be compromised, the tax at the airport will be compromised. And this is why we're trying to explain earlier. Because you no longer have to meet a 6% primary surplus, and it drops to one, which is a fiscal space of over $500 million. It means now that whereas we were raising this money and giving it to these entities, since we don't have the money, we now have to carry that above the line, what we call above the line. But the fact that we have the fiscal space means now that we will have to carry that. So that is incorporated in our reduced target from 6% primary surplus to 1%. And that's how you deal with that. You with me? So the other thing is that it's good politics to talk about the size of cabinet. The important thing is that even with a large cabinet, the government had surpluses, was running a primary surplus. So it's good politics to come and say, but the thing to do is to cut, right? Cut the amount of people in the cabinet. And that, any opposition would say, but it's minor. The amount of money that these cabinet ministers get in relation to the budget is minor. If the time comes for sacrifice to be made, all of us who receive money from the public purse, hopefully, and I say hopefully, with the exclusion of people below a certain income level, will have to join in the contribution. Not sending home people saying, this is about making the adjustment, because I keep repeating, it is about having spending power still. And in the absence of tourism and the workers in restaurants and all the other people that associate with tourism, we still have to have people with money to keep the economy going. So opening back up the private sector, that's why we are trying to get self-employed people something. People in the informal sector, families that are not earning a little mitigation. This and all of this is designed for when the private sector opens back up, and it's going to be difficult for them to at least see some kind of activity. And in doing so, we will start to see the engine of rolling again. It has to start rolling. But you can't reach top speed in 10 seconds in an economy that is designed for Formula One car.
Mr. Clark.
Thank you. Listen, I think people need to understand really and truly the revenue, the $2.5 billion a year that we get from revenue in government, that the government gets the revenue, you know, comes from the private sector and the public of our area. That's where it comes from. So if we have to be able to give the private sector and the public of Barbados the ability to continue living. We have to be able to reduce the unemployment. The fear of having 40 to 50,000 people unemployed in Barbados is something that you don't want to imagine. Let's be realistic. Nobody wants that. even the 29,000 or how many thousand we have now that are getting unemployment benefits, they're getting a significantly reduced benefit payment compared to what they used to get to pay home every week, every month. These things are to help those people and to help companies retain people so that we avoid having more people like that in Barbados. It is to reduce the numbers of unemployment, and for those that unfortunately had to be unemployed and they were due a tax refund, that will help them through the situation. But government is solely dependent on the general public and the private sector to fund government and to fund what needs to be done for the country. So it is no use taking the money and putting it back on the bank and saying, well, you got to keep it for a rainy day. This is the rainy day for us at this time. This is the rainy day. And we need to ensure that people continue to act and spend money wisely. That's the important thing. But we have to ensure that this economy gets back on a footing. Mm-hmm. It's going to take time, but it needs to start.
Well, as I have you here, the $40 million interest-free VAT loans.
Right. Now, those loans are basically for the people who are going through cash flow problems. If you have outflows and you don't have any revenue to have inflows for VAT, obviously, there's no cash to pay the VAT over because you already paid out significant parts of VAT on imports. It's mainly a lot to do with the people that import or have a lot of output VAT. So this is going to be over a period of time. I think it was a limited time frame. I don't remember what was the limited time frame for
October.
October, yeah, 6 months, I believe.
Yeah.
So we're getting them through this period of cash crunch so that businesses can continue operations, small and large.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking here as well as the $20 million Small Business Wage Fund, as well as the $200 million Tourism Working Capital Facility. Let's just deal with the Small Business Wage Fund, because I think we already looked at the tourism sector.
Right. Let me talk about the small business. The small business in Barbados represents about 7,500 businesses, and they employ almost 40,000 people in Barbados. I don't think people realize how many. I'm talking about the small and micro businesses, you know, just between 1 to 25 people. Many of them are employing less than 10 people. So you have a whole group of people that are in great demand for cash flow at this time. They need support. They've gone through hell in the last 6 weeks, and they will go through very difficult times in the next few months. A lot of them, too, depend on the tourist industry. That is not there for them. But in order to keep people employed, this is to help them through that, as far as I can see from what the government has said. I certainly welcome it. I think the Small Business Association welcomes it very much because they have been clamoring for assistance for quite a while now. And I really think this is a good initiative.
But do you think that this is an area... Just give me a break here, Mr. Pisa. Okay, Mr. Pisa, just give me a second here. Do you think that there would be a level of innovation that would be coming from these small businesses now? Because, as you said, a lot of them depend on ancillary services to the tourism sector. So do you think that level of innovation will be coming in?
I think you've already started to see some innovation already take place. But I think that everybody is not going to adapt. You got to be realistic. The stronger people will adapt, the people that want to see a future and understand the change of Barbados will adapt. I'll have to adapt. They don't have a choice. But there are a number of people that will struggle. There's no doubt about that. And this is where the associations need to help them through this, giving them advice and so on to help them manage their affairs, because it is a difficult time for many people at this time. Very difficult.
You mentioned the association. Now, a number of businesses are not part of any associations, just like, just to use Dr. Maskell's example again, but taxi drivers, a lot of them are not even involved in cooperatives or anything. Do you see that post-COVID, that for there to be a need for people, for businesses or people involved in certain sectors to be coming together, even if it's in a loose cooperative arrangement or something, so that they can have a representation as one voice, talking to government or talking to the authorities in general, looking after their interests?
I certainly do. I think many of these small businesses should be joining the Small Business Association. They have bar events, You have co-ops and so on, taxi co-ops and other co-ops that are farming co-ops. But I certainly think that getting together as a group and sharing ideas and concerns and having one voice certainly is going to be strong for any group. So I look for it. I mean, we have it in the chamber, we have it in manufacturers, we have it in the small business association, and the private sector is the umbrella body. And that's why I'm here, right? Speaking for the private sector of Barbados. So I think it is very much a necessity, and I hope that many of the smaller business people would see the need to do so at this time.
Mm-hmm. All right, we can't.
Just
give me a second. Just give me a quick second. It's now 1:25. We have to wrap up, so I'm going to give you exactly 2 minutes to wrap up. So you pull together everything in that 2 minute section. Go right ahead.
I don't know how that is going to work, but I will do my best. In relation to this last point that I didn't have the opportunity to have an input in, I am concerned that the cultural industry sector was completely ignored in light of the fact that Propova has canceled and the reggae festival was canceled. I thought I would have heard some special consideration for that sector. And I really hope that it was an oversight and that you would get back to it with some dispatch. In relation to the various segments, as highlighted by the substantive Prime Minister, we still have our concerns in relation to how projects are to be financed in an environment where our revenues are cut significantly, not just from tourism, but also from potential tax revenue. We need to be very aware of all the different scenarios and to have them put before us, because it sounds nice, but it is not adding up given that reality. We have to be very clear in our minds where money is coming from and how it is going to be applied. And we have our concerns in relation to the pandemic solidarity bonds, given that the public confidence in bonds was destroyed, at the very least disturbed, in 2018. So we also wish to have, I'm sorry we didn't have time to move on to number 5, where we could have some discussion in depth in relation to that, but hopefully we will have that opportunity in the not too distant future.
And I have to cut you there. I do apologize, but you're hearing the theme in the background.
Yes, I was trying to talk really fast.
I know. Dr. Maskell, you have 90 yes. seconds.
First of all, for survival, given that we are experiencing something that none of us ever experienced. So this is about taking care of the household first and foremost, taking care of the most vulnerable, making sure that businesses can return, because without businesses, there's no economy. And without households to sell their services and offer their expertise to businesses, there's no economy. In the circumstances, therefore, government has had to be innovative to find ways to spend quite a lot of money. Almost $75 million have already been spent on the health sector to get us to this point that we are at. Some were allocated before, some of the dollars were allocated before in the last fiscal year. But overall, what we're here into is how do we keep Barbadians safe while giving them an opportunity still to get back into the formal economy? And in all fairness, there has to be a very delicate balance between how we pursue our health concerns while still appreciating that wealth is still necessary. Because I think that people will now understand that, because there used to be a lot of talk about economies separated from societies, will now understand.
So you should
not put your mouth in it.
All right, Dr. Masker, stay on point, please.
I'm not with you.
Mr. Pisa, please.
What's happening here that you now see that with a health situation, you still need an economy. So the two are inextricably linked. There can't be any separation of these two.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Maskell. And Mr. Clark, you have the final word.
First of all, I would like to thank the government for managing the health situation in the manner so far. I believe this is now management of the economy and getting us back on track. The two of them must go hand in hand. We must never forget the overarching health situation. But this is not written in stone. We have to understand that this has to be looked at as a fluid economy at this time. And we need to be prepared as a social partnership to sit down with government and the private sector and unions and sit down and continue to work towards a solution to get Barbados out of where we are and back on track to be a strong Barbados again.
Thank you so very much, all of you. And I know that there have been a lot of calls that we weren't able to take, but I thought it was a very enlightening discussion on Barbados' COVID-19 recovery plan. And we examined whether it is workable and does it go far enough. Yes, much more could have been said because there are a couple of areas I really wanted to get into and we didn't. But there'll be other days to do that. Because I suspect it'll take some tweaking, because this is certainly an unprecedented area that we're in right now, and something must be done to help all of those in society. That is what this plan is about, and all we can do is hope for the best. On behalf of Dennis Johnson, I'm Sanka Price. Thank you, and remember, this program was brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.